Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
QNL.
B. Kaiko.
Brandon actually asked to do the introduction.
What?
Which is like the opposite of everything, and we've entered an alternate universe.
Well, he's a returning co-host, so, you know, he just wanted to...
At least how many returning co-hosts forget everything?
That hasn't exactly helped us in the past very much.
Welcome to episode 253. Joining us on our podcasting sojourn today are our party of co-hosts. Hailing from a land of warm, friendly nuclear glow, the Mian Team.
You can always trust TMIT.
Hailing from a land of constant caffeination, it's Makalua.
Double the coffee.
Hailing from a land down memory lane and of not being Mad Jin, it's QNL.
I think I'm back in the U.S. Maybe?
Sort of.
And hailing from a land where everybody else has built the Great Wall, Dan Q.
Kicking it old school.
Welcome one and all. And hailing from a land that will be gone by the end of this episode, I'm your guest host, B. Kaiko. Let's get to sibbing.
Everyone gets Dan'd sometimes, but Dan gets Dan'd all times.
I picked up a game this week where I'm playing as Japan, because I always play as Japan. And I am on this nice little inlet on a map with 13 AIs. And I'm like surrounded by jungle with a couple hills. And I'm like, sweet, okay, I'll just get the Sacred Path Pantheon. Like two turns before I was about to pop into it, Poland, my neighbor, has adopted the Sacred Path Pantheon.
Isn't that what loading saves is for?
No, that's why you go honor every game.
Yep. I'm trying to be nice to him to have him come over and be like, hey, I wish there was a button to like poke the AI and be like, I like your religion. Come to me. We can be friends. But then, of course, I get iron working. There is no iron anywhere near me. It's on the other side of my small continent, pretty much all hoarded by Byzantium. So I am definitely going down the honor path.
I usually just break the game with chariot rushes in these MP games that we do. Patch, and in contrast with me, it's something you shouldn't trust, as in the don't trust the likely outcome combat predictor, as the title of the thread. And so he was running some tests. Basically, he had a predicted damage outcome of 49 on an attack against a barbarian defender, so he reloaded a save after attacking that barbarian 9 times in a row. Highest outcome was 47, lowest was 40, so like after 10 tries, he got the predicted outcome, and then after like 12 tries, he finally got something more than 49, so there's some skewing going on there. And basically, he's complaining that the UI is not telling the players the truth with regards to the predicted outcomes. Later in the thread, I'm not sure this has actually been confirmed, someone pointed out that depending on the difficulty, you'll do more or less damage against the combat predictor.
Well, Phil, you were really active in this thread,
and yes.
I had found myself agreeing with you quite a bit. That, for one thing, if this is true, it is a pretty major UI problem. But 9 tests, 9 or in the teens tests of a random number generator
is not enough.
Yeah, it's not enough to accurately gauge if there actually is a problem here. And I get where the OP is coming from, because let me tell you how many times I've been irritated when my samurai is supposed to finish off this random dweeb and he survives with 1 HP when I should have massacred it. But I believe there's a swing of 10 points of HP in either direction from the median outcome. And you're going to have to do hundreds of tests.
Nah, you don't need hundreds. Not necessarily. Well, it depends on your outcomes to a degree. I said it in a thread. If you had like 15 straight 40s, you'd really, at that point, you'd start raising an eyebrow if you were predicted to get 49. Because so far down, if it is a 10-point range, and if you got that every single time, you're either suspecting that you're not getting a new seed on reload or that something's amiss. I would probably guess that you're not getting a new seed on reload, given all else being equal, if I got that outcome. But that's besides the point. The more you're trying to pick up on like a small thing, the more tests you would need, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, this is something that should come up in like QA testing. But just looking at the numbers, you know, obviously 10 is kind of a small sample size, but it's a huge skew having so many below what the likely outcome would be. If it's like that skewed, like you can take that result as significant, but it depends on how far it's like. Okay. I wouldn't assign it high confidence.
Then
you get a,
but I'd start raising an eyebrow here. Like, it's worth testing.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody did it, you know, like, I don't know, 50 times or something at least. I don't know. I mean, this doesn't seem like very efficient to do, like, by hand and kind of tedious, but, you know, if somebody wants to do it.
I'm pretty sure you can do that, like, through
lack of search funds.
Not through, like, actually physically clicking on the unit over and over. I think there's a way to get it to do that.
Well, there could be other things in the equation going wrong. For instance, it may not be properly calculating. Did he go into honor? Did he take the honor opener? And is it, you know, improperly calculating that? There are a lot of math.
Any number, you're right. Because, if you're like attacking hills, it doesn't factor that. You got flanking bonus, it doesn't factor that. You know, any of those, you're right. Any modifier like that, if the predictor is not factoring it, but it is being applied, then you're going to get a skewed outcome.
I can tell you, playing Japan as my main civilization, it does not factor in Bushido, so far as I can tell, having played this game for years, that I can consistently rely on getting a different outcome when my units are damaged as Japan, because it just forgets about Bushido entirely. But it's more reliable than XCOM's 99% chance to hit.
Wow. It's more reliable than Civ 4, too. But that's partially just because you don't entirely lose a unit on one roll. So, like, you have some chances to work around the RNG in that regard. But I still feel like it not factoring Bushido, that's a UI problem. We don't have, like, verified knowledge that it's actually skewing the data based on your difficulty. If that is happening, that is also a problem. Even if it's an intended design feature that you do less damage on higher difficulties, I could kind of accept that, but it needs to show in the UI. That's really not something that should be learned through trial and error in a strategy game.
I agree. The UI needs to be truthful with you, but as I think you pointed out in some other posters, programmers very likely did not program the UI to lie to the player.
It's almost certainly an oversight. If it is inaccurate, because like you said, we don't have high confidence that there's actually an issue here. But if it is inaccurate, it probably was not intentionally put in. No, that would be odd for this genre. I would not anticipate them doing that.
Which was certainly part of the issue that came up, because Captain Patch, in the very first post, of course, in their final paragraph, speculated that, or else the programmers deliberately lied to us by making all likely outcome predictions overly optimistic. Which, as was pointed out by a biologist, you know, had the OP read something like, hey, I noticed an interesting discrepancy with the combat predictor. I did some preliminary empirical research and got X result from Y trials in Z situation, which seems odd. People probably would have responded by saying, whoa, that's interesting. Somebody should do more research to see if it is consistent across N many trials. Instead, the OP was bluntly melodramatic, using bolded and underlined words and making unfounded assertions. That tends to lead to a certain degree of backlash. Which is true, and yes, Captain Patch also said, the calculator does not show the percentage chance of winning or losing, it shows the most probable amount of loss of strength of both attacker and defender, to which Shaka Khan says, yeah, true, and it doesn't claim to. It's useful in showing you approximate results, and more importantly, what factors lead to that result. You will get it for what it is, a ballpark estimate of what will happen, and don't make decisions that will get you in trouble. To which Captain Patch says, wouldn't you expect it if you'd be given a ballpark estimate that it should be closer to what the actual outcomes are? That being that there would tend to be approximately as many over outcomes as there are under. Especially in a small sample size like this, and skewness was already mentioned by Lisa and others. This is where I kind of get to, how about that average, but also how about that median, right? Because if we had the median, then that would be the middle number in a given sequence of numbers. average, if you get some really low results, some like really wild out there results in terms of, wow, this should have been an absolute win and it wasn't, and look at how much damage I actually took, and then vice versa, that is going to skew the average, particularly when you only have such a small data set. As was described by Captain Patch, and then was it Dan Ophonos, I think, who also did a very small limited test as well. So when you combine that with, as Fyar also pointed out, you only tested one scenario. It was this injured swordsman. Well, he says, what about with a fully healed swordsman? What about ranged attacks, naval warfare, sea to land bombardments, etc., that there are so many scenarios and your conclusion makes a claim about all of them when it really is only one tested scenario.
Just as a quick aside, I think Bikaiko mentioned it's the 10-hit point over-under swing or something. Like, is that confirmed data? Is it impossible to do more than 10 less or more damage than the projection?
I'm not really 100% sure on that.
I think there is some kind of cap, because I've never seen in probably thousands of battles something like egregious where you do like triple the damage or something.
Right. You're not going to get a critical hit like in Fire Emblem and no. Suddenly my samurai is one-shotting your janissary or something like that.
That's just, super that's effective.
It. Yeah. Go, Pikachu.
So it probably is capped. I'm just curious if it's 10 or something else.
I'm not aware either.
And if it's like a bell curve, so you expect it to be more centered around the either the average or median, whatever. If you have a known 20-point range, are you going to get right in the middle of that range more frequently, or is it just as likely to roll 10 under as 2 under?
In the chat, the buzzing. It could be intentional that the user interface displays the maximum damage, where the XCOM 2 UI does display maximum damage, excluding unit-specific modifiers. And Bushido was already mentioned by Brandon as he likes to play Japan. And if that is not being taken into account, that is definitely an issue, because you can see on screen, for example, you don't just see here is the likelihood of the combat damage that you will take if you attack and what damage they will give you in return, if any. But then right in the indent underneath, it's telling you, okay, plus 15% of this, minus 15% of that. And if it is taking it into account in the programming, but it's not displaying it in the UI, or it's telling you in the UI it is taking into account, but the programming is not, then that is also a notable inconsistency that needs to be addressed.
My guess is that if there is an issue, if we can actually detect that, that's the most likely scenario, that some modifier is not being taken into account in one or the other way.
Which is still my guess. But
oh, yeah, that's not good, but yeah, definitely not a maximum potential damage, because I have one-shotted or finished off units that I was projected not to kill.
I had a samurai in a recent game that, by all accounts, I positioned him into his death, and he managed to survive 3 attackers with 1 HP and live to be my most highly promoted unit throughout the game, so it swings in your favor, too.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to having a larger data set, in times where it would swing in your favor when the likely outcome bat predictor said it didn't, I think it would be useful, because it's more likely we're going to remember those instances where we felt screwed over by that, as opposed to, wow, I shouldn't have won that, but apparently I did.
Good old confirmation bias.
And also anecdotally, when I was reading this thread, I thought, well, yeah, it's been almost 6 years since Civilization V was initially released, so September 2010. And as much as I've played it, I actually think more about losses from the likely combat predictor in Civ 4.
Yeah, me too.
Than Civilization 5. The rage just seemed to be greater, but the fact that we're talking about this even now in Civilization 5, again, almost 6 years from the release, I would be surprised if someone already hasn't done a comprehensive examination of this and maybe has just not published the data, or it's difficult to find that data, something that we could springboard off of beyond these very small data sets. Because as interesting as it is to speculate, and some of the good questions are, you know, are important, like, is this accurately showing? Like, is there the consistency between the UI and the programming? But as soon as you start making conclusions based on data sets, at best, it's speculation at this point. But I mean, it's good that we're asking this question. There's obviously an interest in trying to understand, even after it's been, what, like, again, almost 6 years since the game was released and 3 years since the last expansion pack was released, trying to understand what is going on here in the hopes that, you know, in a future Civilization title, if there is one, we won't feel so conflicted. Because it's like I'm reading some of these posts and it's like, yeah, that's right, that's what I experienced. And I read the next post, it's like, no, that's what I experienced. And then I don't know what the heck to feel.
Well, and certainly you're right. When you run into a bad roll of the dice, you're going to remember that because it's going to piss you off.
Do you guys actually notice, though? Because it, like, when I look at it, I don't really pay that much attention. I mostly look at the bar for just an approximation in Civ 5.
Yeah, and that's
a very big contrast from Civ 4, where I would look at the percentages. When you lose a unit, too, like, you feel it. But very frequently in Civ 5, even if you roll low, like, you're either shooting something that's not taking damage back, or you're expecting to trade damage.
Right.
So one of those situations where it's hard to notice unless you're looking for it, except when you kill a unit or lose a unit, the bar showed that wouldn't happen. That's right. When I really notice. But I've actually seen more outcomes of killing a unit by surprise, of course, because the AI sucks at the game. So I knew that it's not max damage because of that.
Yeah, it's also difficult to see what the HP value is on a damaged unit in the UI. Yeah. That's one of the deficiencies of Civ 5's UI. But, you know, I really notice it when I'm supposed to kill a unit and they survive with like 2 HP or something like that. That's when it's really noticeable.
You know, it's an interesting contrast here. Phil, you're saying that you tend to look at the bar more than the numbers. I tend to look at the summary, major or minor, and then you could actually be looking at the numbers. And at this point in time, especially 6 years on, I know there was a major change in combat. What was that? I think the first expansion pack, Gods and Kings, when we went from the 10 hit points out to 100.
Yeah.
So we started paying attention to the combat again. And then we kind of had to decide in our mind, okay, do I really need to pay attention to the numbers? Civilization 4 didn't have the bar. We didn't have that nice summary of major or minor. And quite frankly, I'm past the point, long past the point, where I would say, it says it's a major, and then I look down at the numbers and I think, that doesn't meet my definition of major. I just take it as not only major, but at this point in time, 6 years on, sometimes I don't even look at that. It's just like I know based on my unit and their unit, whether it's fully healed or not, the terrain that it is on, I might just scan quickly to see about promotions that are not immediately obvious by looking at the map and just having played thousands upon thousands of hours of this game.
Yeah.
It's not that my interest isn't piqued by this. It's part of the reason why I chose the topic. But it's also a very different reaction I'm having now at this point because I don't have to rely on the numbers so much because I have my own data set in my head.
Yeah, you have the experience.
Yeah, I've got the experience. Right now I can't say, well, on March 13th, I attacked 3 archers with 6 swordsmen. Like, I don't remember that specific level of detail. I'm certain there are people that are out there that can do that and recall that quite well. But
you'd probably win that.
I should certainly the heck hope so.
Common sense roll works pretty good. Is that health bar down? Is it starting to get colored red? Don't try it. Unless you're absolutely desperate and the city has just a sliver left.
YOLO strats. I find like that if you have the city at min, the literal min health, you always win.
Yeah.
I've never attacked a city that I had flatlined, then attacked again a couple times over to get XP. Even a scout on the brink of death, I've managed to take a city with that. So
I'm just thinking of the times when in MP where we've been desperate to get that one last city, and of course we miss it by one unit.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that brings up an interesting point, because when I'm attacking, and we're going to use city as an example even as compared to a unit, I view that very differently if I'm attacking with a ranged unit as compared to a melee unit. Because even after the city has been bombarded down to nothing, is that all I have is a warrior? Oh, you know, it was a 20, 30 some odd strength city, but it doesn't have anymore. And the combat indicator's like, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
No, I'm not combat indicator.
So clearly it is not taking that into account.
Well, in that case, I've seen the bar say, you're both going to die. And I'm like, well.
How does the city die?
Well, you raise it, but yeah.
Thread started by General Carlos. Hey everyone, just curious as to see what everyone's favorite era in Civilization 5 is. Mine is in the industrial, because that's when my empires really start booming. And yes, I had to yell really, at least relatively speaking, because it is in all caps.
Yeah.
The ideologies start coming around, and the standard infantry units, riflemen, actually start becoming reasonable for warfare. So what is your favorite era? Well, I'm going to avoid pouncing on this wording of reasonable for warfare, because that's really not the point. In terms of responses, I went through and I tallied what people said was their favorite era. Some people were like, oh, my favorite era is this and this, or it could be this or that. And it's like, okay, choose one. Ancient and medieval were tied at 6. Renaissance! Yeah. Was it 5? Of course I had to do that. Followed by classical, industrial, and one person chose atomic. I do not find myself in either of the leading categories or even in second place. My favorite era is classical.
I got to go with industrial because that's when the tall versus wide cancer starts to be removed a little bit.
Yeah, I think industrial, I'm not surprised to see a lot of people pick that because so many game options suddenly open up
at
the industrial era. You know, you have the ideologies breaking open. You've gotten into rationalism. And mine is personally the Renaissance because...
Renaissance!
Damn it. I was going to go, don't do it!
You can start your exploration then, reasonably get the World Congress founded. I play a lot of Japan, and though samurai is a late medieval unit, I often can break right into the Renaissance right after getting samurai, and I'm having fun just steamrolling over anybody remaining on my continent at that point. I really feel like your empire by the Renaissance period has really coalesced.
Yeah, I agree. I'm like doing an early war usually like in the medieval period. And then, I don't know, industrial, like that's when I feel like the game either starts to run away from me or not. But the game's like still full of potential in the Renaissance period, especially if you get pikes before anybody else, which is pretty, I don't know, easy to do.
Pikes are medieval.
Are they?
Yes.
Okay,
they're kind of
that's what
later
I meant then.
Medieval. They're still useful in the Renaissance period.
Yeah, well, that's when you actually get the unit and when you can effectively use them.
I don't like how they upgrade, so you got to make the most of them.
Oh, yeah, up to Lancers.
While they're in medieval, you got to make sure you're using them well. The LKs that you get from commerce are also really nice, and they're the same type of unit. You can use copy bows or chariots along with the pikes. It's fine.
It depends.
And yeah, if I'm doing early war, I like the early war. I love if I have four horse or more.
Jaguar rush.
No, I'll do chariot rushes. The AI sucks at handling them so much, unless the terrain is just awful. You'd be surprised. On Immortal, you can still kill like three AI with the chariots.
I've enjoyed listening to my fellow co-hosts, See Here listeners, talk about medieval or Renaissance or industrial and try to parse, you know, which is which and which is their favorite when, of course, everyone knows that they're completely wrong and it's in fact classical. The reason that I like classical, Phil mentioned this unit already, Composite Bowman, which was introduced in Gods and Kings. To me, unless you're one of these late starts people, and, you know, we've talked enough about you on the show, which is, I know, like next to never.
It's like, shut up, late
jelly.
Start people.
Okay, there is the snowball effect, and I can hear some people saying, ah, Dan, that would be ancient era, hello. Yeah, but ancient era, you're setting the foundation. You're setting things in place in terms of, okay, I hope that I'm able to do this.
Yeah, you're building chariot archers. It's your foundation.
Whereas to me, classical, kind of your first test of how solid your foundation is. It comes from Composite Bowman, to me, to be the primary component for those early rushes of city-states and or civs proper, whether you're going to wipe out a civilization completely or not. It's also that era that you start building your economy, you get currency, you get philosophy for the, you know, your national college. You start getting a little more sense of what strategic resources are available on the map and available to you. You can get the Writers Guild, so you're starting to work your specialists in your city. Your cities are starting to grow. You're looking at your first happiness buildings, like a Colosseum, for example. Your cities are starting to get larger and are in need of some assistance for food, so you can start constructing aqueducts. To me, and this is based on my own experience, how well you do in classical is going to determine considerably how well you are going to do in subsequent eras. And you could say go back and say, yeah, but how far back do we want to go? But to me, classical has a lot of interesting decisions to be made and a lot of what-if scenarios that you can still be playing out in your head, which at times can be overwhelming. But particularly once we get to industrial and the ideology start coming out, I mean, yes, it definitely helped the late game. And Civilization needed that, and not just Civilization V. And Civilization V does that well. But in terms of possibilities and the exploration phase that's still going on, it may not be the best era. And again, it wasn't the question of best. It was a question of favorite. So for me, that's why classical holds a near and dear place in my heart.
We all know why Dan actually likes the classical era. It's because you can build the Great Wall.
Of course. I'll put it number two, though. And something very worth pointing out. Ancient era, a lot of your choices are made for you by your terrain, who's near you, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get your best tiles, your luxuries, all that set so that you can progress with just either growing or building military units. But a lot of those choices are just experience. Classical, you have real trade-offs, and they affect you for the rest of the game. Like Dan said, if you go down the composite bows, if you really want to hit somebody fast with composite bows, if you really want to maximize their window of effectiveness, you are necessarily going to delay your national college at least to a degree. Your social policy choices might be different if you're doing that versus if you're not. You can make a real case for going liberty if you need the early hammers for those kinds of rushes and you need the happiness for meritocracy for the cities. It makes a big difference. And it's the same thing if you're on a lottery map and you're trying to decide between wrecking someone on your continent versus getting your naval game going. You have that choice to make as well. And your national college timing really does vary quite a bit depending on your social policy choice. So there's a lot going on there.
National colleges for a plus 50% boost.
But you have to evaluate if it's worth going for. That's part of the reason I would probably grade that out as my second favorite. But just having the ability to start taking over the world in industrial is why I favor the industrial era. But in terms of meaningful choices, classical is probably where the most are in a typical game.
As long as no one says that classical is their least favorite era, then we're fine.
I don't think anyone's going to pick it as least favorite.
Well, maybe someone will pick it as their least favorite now because they want to fight me. Wow.
I'd love to be funny and say that like, Future Era is my favorite, but I don't get to play Future Era often enough for it to be my favorite.
Yeah.
And it's very quickly when you nuke people and then drop XCOM next to their cities.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's fun, but I don't get to do it as often as I'd like.
And it's probably a little bit more enjoyable than bothering with space. Because the AI can penalize you for being a warmongering menace to the world or counterpull you at all, really. You just nuke their capitals down to nothing and then land a unit next to them and they can't do anything and you take it the next turn and then you win.
I will show you being a warmongering menace.
And some people listening to this might be saying, Dan, I'm on Team Classical like you, but you didn't talk about one of, if not the most obvious reasons to choose Classical.
The Great Wall.
No, Brandon.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a line for everyone where it's like, no Phil, no Brandon, no Sumi, no Mackie, no Lisa's coming.
I feel like I've gotten a good thing started here. What?
No Phil. And and some people are saying, Dan, the fact that you are most likely going to reach classical era, that is a reason to make it a favorite. Well, I think that might actually fall under a better argument in terms of best era, but that's even sketchy because I could see someone saying the fact why I like a later era is because I've actually reached the later era. I have demonstrated I have done well enough for the previous eras to still be alive. Okay, then there's questions of sometimes you don't just want to be alive, you want to be able to thrive as well. But that's a reason why I didn't mention classical.
Hello, you play to win the game. Hello. Huh.
Although if someone says, I like information era, so I can win by score. we're going to have a little sidebar. We'll go off the live stream for that. We don't need anyone to hear that. This is polite company.
So what is your favorite era then, Mackie?
I don't know. I don't think I've really thought about that. I play through things. I have fun. I'm supposed to pick an era?
You're supposed to pick an era.
That's what the topic says.
I mean, Mac, the fact that you were called out by a guest. Wow, that's...
Yeah, wrecked.
Whoa.
Maybe Renaissance, because you start getting some of the fun stuff.
Now, Mackie.
What?
You know why you said, Renaissance! That's why you chose it. Come on, you can be honest with us. It's just you and I.
No, it's you and I and a bunch of other people and a bunch of people listening on the internet. And no, that is not why I picked it. Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I want to mute you guys every time somebody says that.
Even I do. And that's saying something.
Yeah. Like, see, even Phil is just like, no, stop.
You know what the solution is.
Of course,
is,
we're just encouraging them to do it more, but that's besides the point.
The solution is build the Great Wall.
Yes.
Oh, Brandon.
Well, actually, no. If we build it, then it won't troll them very much.
Well, the buzzing's trying to call me out. I'm calling you out, classical man Dan. This Saturday night, me, you, in a cage, no holds barred. I'll give you a classical education in pain. I'm like, you can't handle the pain.
Oh, sure.
And I'm like, that you made it to the industrial era is a testament to the strength of your classical era.
So next discussion, are sieves with late game you use fundamentally better on higher AI difficulties?
Nope.
Sorry, Phil,
next topic.
No, we need discussion. We need discussion.
Imagine not here, so I had to do it. My style is a little different, but the message is the same. No.
Does the style involve nuclear weapons? I think so.
That's not a UU, well, thankfully.
Well, you know, a couple of people that responded in this thread were, from their experience, actually it's the ones in the middle that are kind of the best for helping you catch up.
It's a question of utility, really. The sooner you get a benefit, the better. And if it comes later, it needs to be stronger in order to compensate that to be useful, even on deity. So something medieval that's like a Keshik or a Camel Archer, that's such a powerful, unique unit that it can fight even two arrows in front pretty effectively. Yeah, okay. That's going to be pretty good on deity, of course. But horse archers are a game-ending unit, potentially, even on deity. Any map, really, that you don't have boats that you need to get across. It's possible, as long as you're not on the faster game speeds, to win the game outright with horse archers, for example. The Indian UU is really good. That's really early in the game. And the ones that are early but not good are the ones that you just can't really do a whole lot with offensively. So they're not bringing a lot of utility to the table. Like, for example, a Jaguar just does not do enough damage to a deity AI to have its marginal value over a warrior be strong enough to really make a huge difference.
Jaguars can promote, at least. The units that you can spam early on and promote and that keep their abilities like the Jaguars do can be useful in the mid to late game.
Absolutely, but the way Civ 5 is built, especially against the computer, but really against people too, ranged units are so dominant.
Yeah,
you definitely want blocking units. You want some units that can melee. Having at least a mounted unit or two or three that can kill a unit and get the heck out of there, very helpful, and I would say crucial in some situations. But the bulk of your damage is coming from ranged in most cases. And be that, you know, your crossbows or compubows or frigates or artillery, whatever it is, it's something that's shooting without thinking.
Battleships.
Yeah, battleships.
I love battleships.
Even bombers, nukes. I mean, those all serve a similar role, but to differing levels of efficiency. But that's where you're getting your damage. So you use that, emphasize that, like murder bows are, of course, then really good. The English longbows for chokonus as well.
The problem with, I think, a lot of the late game unique units is you're not really seeing much benefit from upgrading into them. By the time you're that late in the game, if you're a warmonger, you're probably not really building units anymore because you shouldn't be losing a lot of units on the way. And so you're promoting into things with the warmongering money you've been making so that you can keep all the promotions on your veteran units. So, for instance, one of the worst units in the game is the Zero. It was already bad before the introduction of the triplanes, and upgrading from a triplane into a Zero is absolutely worthless. And similarly, upgrading into Minutemen when you're America, if you already have, for instance, the Rough Brain promotion on your unit you're upgrading, you just lost the benefit of making that upgrade into that unique unit.
You'd probably avoid taking that promotion as them, but yeah, it's a good point. The later it is, the more chances you have to lose the game or get into a very bad position before you even gain access to it. And then is that unit, something like a Minuteman or a Zero, really so strong that it's going to take you from a losing position to a winning position on deity? Probably not. You're going to need to play as if you don't have a unique unit effectively until that point. Unlikely to make a difference between winning or losing, whereas something as strong as a Keshik or Camel Archer or Horse Archer, those kinds of things absolutely can. You know, they can do things that similar units in similar era cannot do, especially with Horse Archers, Elephants, the resourceless ones early on. They're really game-changing.
Yeah, by the time you get to something like a Panzer or a Zero or B-52, you should have already snowballed to the point where victory is in your grasp, that unique unit's not going to matter.
Zeros don't take oil, right? Is that correct?
That is correct.
But okay. You've already spent the oil on building the triplane or whatever. Zeros are just useless.
Yeah, they're junky. I mean, I guess you can say if you want to just end the game now because you're already in a winning position, you can build like heaps of them because there's no downside. Aside from the hammers invested, so you can just get a little extra damage. But like you said, that's not going to alter the outcome of the game. Like, they're not good. They're better than a fighter, but how many fighters do you even build, really, typically?
Yeah, I legitimately think that the unique units, the late game unique units, really needed to be stronger than they are. Yeah. Not just like a small upgrade from the base unit, but a large upgrade to make up for all that time you didn't have a unique unit. For instance,
I agree.
Brazil's unique unit is just absolutely worthless at the tail end of the game. First of all, hopefully Brazil hasn't had any need for war, but they really could have used something early on defensive. And instead they get this like minorly upgraded, very late game unit that is just not going to ever matter.
This has been a problem in every Civ where they've had unique units. The late game unique units, Firaxis just refuses to upscale them to the point where they can be game changing units, despite the fact that you really need to be fortunate just to be able to use them. Maybe they're trying to balance for late era starts, but I can't imagine late era starts being that common relative to ancient era starts if you were to track it.
There's no way they're balancing for that. There's no reason for them to.
No, you're right. And it's unlikely they're balancing for that, because then basically any early game units would be completely worthless. It's been three civs in a row, and it's been the same problem every time. I don't care if you're talking about Civ IV Navy SEALs or either iteration of Panzer or the Zeros or anything like that. You don't get use out of them.
Well, this would be a much more interesting question if we were talking about Civilization Revolution. Firaxis does have a precedent for having era-specific unique units and just uniques in general. It goes to, you've reached this particular era, tying back to a previous point, this civilization now gets another advantage, and this civilization gets another advantage. Now, the only difficulty with staying with the Civ Rev is then we have to have a conversation about how the AI is significantly poorer as compared to the PC version. But primarily, the reason I bring this up is because there is precedent for Firaxis looking at mid to later game uniques and trying to fill out on the technology tree what civilizations get what a particular point in time to help make up for the fact that up until this point, you did not have a unique something to compete with.
Yeah, I would say that if you look at past lists that people have developed of what are the best unique units in the game, the top tier list is filled with mid-game units. And that's really where you need a mid-game unit to break open a game for you. That's where you want it to be. I don't think that does change on the higher difficulty levels.
In the chat, The Buzzing says, I think Brazil's unique unit is more about triggering golden ages to push your culture as you get close to culture victory, but I appreciate your point. I would even condense that, not even just to push you towards culture victory, but just to push your culture towards more social policies and or ideological tenets.
Yeah, one of the reasons I was more comfortable with co-hosting again is because I've been playing a lot of Civ lately.
Yay, Lisa.
It helps. It helps to play the game that we're talking, you know, unless you're Imran.
I'm not so good at Civ 5 just yet, but I usually play on Emperor, and half the time I'll win it. Just been experimenting with different maps, and I'm thinking about like making this move to Immortal, but also like I'm not very like flexible on my victory conditions because I always go Spaceship. The last one I won the spatial victory in was Brazil. And I've been playing Ahmed Almansor a lot, the Arabians.
Banana science.
Yeah. And the Koreans, obviously.
What type of maps are you typically playing on? Like land masses with other AIs, or do you kind of have your continent, a continent, for example, to yourself?
Nowadays, I'll just like select random, but it'll usually be like continents or fractal. I was stuck on an archipelago map a week ago or something. That kind of was tough, especially as Caesar. But
did you win that one, though? I bet you did, because the AI is not... Really? The AI is pretty bad at Archipelago, but I guess it's just for warfare.
Yeah, well, actually, I think the AI like ended up in a bigger landmass than I did, and I ended up on a pretty small one, and I wish I had Polynesia for this one.
And you were Rome on an archipelago?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
that would be really tough.
It's like playing without uniques, basically. You have your unique ability and nothing else in function. Okay, the reason AI is bad on Archipelago is that it doesn't move and shoot with boats. Well, it doesn't really move and shoot at all.
Yeah, it has no idea how to do that.
So you can really abuse naval warfare. Like, you can have perfectly evenly matched navies, and as long as you have some ranged naval units, you can just completely trash the AI for free. Do you run Tradition, Lisa, when you're going for space, typically?
I've been going Liberty most of the time, though obviously I have to do Rationalism after.
Yeah. The most common on the forum is Tradition into Rationalism, by far, for fast science victories. You need, like, a favorable map for Liberty to even be competitive. So I would try out some Tradition if you haven't yet.
Yeah, I will try that after. One Brazil game that I won was Earth Map, that's what it was. I was in North America, too.
Last time I played a science victory, I did the Maya. I was doing religion to science conversion, which is what they're good at. And I had a belligerent Rome on my southern border that would come up and pester me every once in a while. And, you know, I have these great archer units and they couldn't really do anything. So Augustus shows up on my border. I'm like, oh, here we go again. And a screen comes up and he says, you have something I want. Give it to me. And so he makes a demand for like a few of my luxuries or something. And so I tell him where he can stick those bananas. And interestingly enough, and this is the only time I've seen this, it immediately declared war. It's a similar screen to when your ally comes and says, friend, can you denounce this person with me? And you say no, and they denounce you in retaliation. Apparently, there is a similar screen where the AI makes a demand. And if you say no, it's an immediate declaration of war. And it's really rare, and I got Rome to do it, and then I kicked his butt.
Although it wasn't an immediate declaration of war, a few turns after a comparably strong AI asked me, hey, things aren't going well over here, can you help a friend? And they wanted 52 gold a turn. I'm like, no.
A couple months ago, I had a Japan, I think it was an Emperor game. I usually play on a large continents or small continents map. And so I was plunked in the middle of at least three tiles in each direction of jungle. I was on a jungled hill. There was one luxury near me, and it was gems buried in jungle. I tried sending away my warrior a little bit, looking for, you know, some coast or something, and ended up just bounding in the middle of the jungle, dug my way north, and met England, who is up in like some tundra area, like a little bit of forest, and managed to find eventually some iron up there, I think. But I met her and with my scout went piddling around. Two turns later, and this is like turn 13 or something, she denounces me two turns after meeting her. I'm like, what the hell, lady? This is why nobody likes you. I'm never trading.
My immediate thought is that she had contact with another civilization that you also had contact with, and they already didn't like you.
So she succumbed to peer pressure?
She was the first AI I had met.
She covets the lands you currently own.
You shattered her worldview that her people were the only people on the planet. So, of course, it's your fault.
Yeah, up in the frozen wastelands of England.
Yeah. You want internal trade routes there, because if you just have trash land, like, your capital is usually still tolerable. So you settle, like, one or two more cities if you get one luxury.
Yeah,
and then you just run food to your capital with tradition and grow that. And that's really all you can do. But unless you're on, like, deity, you can usually play out of that pretty easily.
But I was playing against Japan, too, and that's not a lovely start for Japan. I ended up settling up north near England to get access to some iron, and since she was already going to come at me anyway and be a jerk, I antagonized her. And that didn't work out so well, because she managed to turn all the AI on the continent against me. I wish I had saved like the first turn start so I could have posted that, see if anybody could have dug their way out of that hole.
But it was, yeah, I love playing trash can.
Terrible.
Starts. I love trash terrible game starts. I got a Tundra Hell one in a Turncast game not too long ago. It had like some seafood, and then literally on the island I was on, I think it was like Tilted Axis map or something, I had nothing but snow and tundra. Those are the only two terrain types on the entire island.
Oh,
and I was just like, okay. I didn't quite get high score on that one, but I did okay because I got God of the Sea or whatever. I was at least able to grow the capital really huge using sea trade routes and tradition. My favorite one recently, Dan will remember this story, Mackie 2 probably.
Oh boy.
A lot of times players in Turncast will ask for a restart if they ran them into Venice or India. I really don't understand India, but I understand Venice. So that happened in a game where I was playing with Drusane recently. Drusane and Dino, I think, were in that one. And I had been thinking about how I would play Venice if I random them even before that. And so he wanted to restart because he got Venice. And I'm like, okay, to heck with this. You know, now that I control him and do this, I have to do it. So I like immediately on the rehost, I straight up picked Venice. And Drusane's like, screw you, man, or whatever. And like, I'm at the start. I'm like, you know what? I'm researching animal husbandry first. If I get horses, I'm opening honor with Venice.
Oh, dear.
I wound up winning high score in that game with honor Venice. because I rushed out like two or three eyes with the chariot archers. It was really ridiculous. So much trade. I had so much money from all the trade routes and cities I had. Honor Venice is certainly an orthodox, but the troll value is where that really is like, yeah.
So I'm curious, who do you play as regularly, Mackie?
I just do like we do on Turncast and set it to random a lot.
She goes commando.
Yes, on Turncast. Thank you for bringing that up, Phil. Commando. Where you let the game choose randomly for you what set you're going to play.
We all go commando together.
And if it ends up being a bad map or bad sieve for the kind of map it's given me, I'm like, nope, restart, try again. Bad choice game.
I'll play whatever. But I'm not picking Venice on purpose.
As time has gone on, I'm less likely to rage over my sieve choice. Comment on the YouTube publishing of episode 252. As one of our forum talk topics, we discuss setting up a game to make a particular civilization quote-unquote overpowered in Civilization V, to which Glow in the Dark, that's right, not the dark, the dark, says Carthage on Highlands would also be pretty overpowered as you can just ignore the mountain ranges. To which I responded, I agree it would be advantageous that a Highlands map lends itself to more mountain ranges than most otherwise, but I see it more as a situational advantage than a general one, let alone being overpowered. Opportunities to circumvent these ranges would likely arise more often on this map type, true, in line with Carthage's unique ability, but you still wouldn't be able to ignore them either, and I said in reference to the hit point penalty if you end your turn on one. Instances being able to effectively bypass these ranges fits more to me under the tactics heading than strategy to me, rather you talking about Highlands or no Highlands, but still, hope the in-person enjoyed the listen. So, in short, I don't think that's an overpiece setup for Carthage, but situationally, tactically, yes, yes, advantageous indeed.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough mountains. There's a Civ 4 script, I forget what it was, maybe it was Global Highlands or something, but it gave you, like, ridiculous quantities of mountain ranges, and it was very common to have choke points generated by that map script. If you had something like that, then I would rate Carthage as overpowering on it. At that point, it's not just a tactical maneuvering thing. You could outright cross mountain ranges and save like 15 turns in the process of doing so if you had that ability back then. The difference would be ridiculous. But Highlands and Civ 5 don't have that kind of scenario too frequently. Or you just have like a row going 30 hexes in a row of mountains that you can cross with your unit speed without ending turn on them, and then attack somebody across from it, and they have no counterplay to that. And if it's an AI, they won't station units because they don't realize you can even attack from there.
Well, like, it's not like you can station a crossbow on a mountain anyway. It'll die in two turns.
Like, there was a thinner spot in the mountain range or something. You could put the fort there and at least have a blocking unit to throw down some zone of control and make it inconvenient to cross. Or, you know, you have some stuff you can do to at least contest where they would land and make it harder for them. But that's not something the AI is going to do. They're not going to drop a fort and leave, like, a couple units here and there to force you to end turns on the mountains. You know, that's just not there.
Translation, the player has a lot more ways to be a dick.
Yeah. But that's also a much larger advantage for a player than an AI.
Who else plays Find the Cursor on the load screen? This is probably the most benign, nerdy topic that could have been assigned to me. Wherein he has posted a picture of him conveniently hiding his cursor. It fits right into the end in Civilization. I've got to say, I do not play Hide the Cursor on the load screen. I play walk away from my computer and make a sandwich while the load screen loads.
That's the most common for me. If I'm really stuck sitting at my computer, you will see me doing random crap with the cursor, though. But I tend to like draw patterns with it and stuff. I don't just hide it.
Do you go to the extent of underscrolling the thread who says I usually spell out civilization with my cursor?
I like the person that decided to make the globe do a sing-along thing with the words.
I don't spell out the word civilization, Dan. I have spelled out words, though.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Go.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
I suppose on the load screen after you've chosen your civ, you could see if you could make the cursor into like a little mustache for some of the characters.
That's true, especially Elizabeth.
Here, I'll trade you this mustache, Elizabeth.
Yes, and so load screen, we can interpret that as load screen of the game or load screen, you know, within the game when you've chosen the civilization. And it's like, let's use the cursor and let's pick this leader's nose.
Yes.
A top 10 list, and it's not even mine.
What? It seems like you try and own all of these things, though.
Well, username Sex on Toast. Ask the other people, let's make a 10 commandments of Civ. And I think it's Macrofinite who had those first top 10.
Number 10. If thou covet thy neighbor's land, wait for a power spike and seize it from him. Feel no remorse for these atrocities, for the weak are destined to perish. Whoa.
True.
Thou shalt not keep intrigue from thy neighbor, because it costs nothing, and thou shalt receive a free diplomatic boost. Unless thou hate thy neighbor, in such a case thou shalt mount a parallel invasion and wipe them off the map.
Alex.
Number 8. Thou shalt probably steal the closest city-state's worker, because, let's face it, there's really no downside.
That's so lame!
So lame. Honestly,
don't probably.
Don't
scratch
do
this
that,
probably.
People. Don't do
no,
that,
no, probably.
People.
You're
lame.
Definitely going to steal the worker.
You better tell Dan that, because he steals everything from city-states.
And not only do you steal that first worker, if you need war workers, just stay at war and keep your scout 2 taxes away from where they're going to build their improvement. And you can repeatedly take workers without new war declarations, thus giving you lots of workers without multiple strikes for declaring war in a city-state.
So lame.
I will challenge the rationality of your statement in the future. You will find you will not hold, but that's okay. Let's go on.
Thou shalt not adulterate thyself with any civ but thy favorite. For who can bear seeing the blasphemous AI bearing thine favorite colors in arms against thee? Unless I get bored. Then try something else. I've got to say, as somebody who plays Japan a lot, Oda Nobunaga really, really sucks at the game. So I'm doing him a favor by not letting him participate unless as me.
He's not as bad as Sif or Tokugawa, though.
I yeah. swear to God that I've rescued Oda at least 8 times in one game, resurrected him, sent him on his way, and he declared war on the most powerful AI, only to get wiped out 3 turns later.
But you keep bringing him back, so he's invincible. You created your own monster. It's your fault.
Yep, yep. Gojira.
Thou shalt definitely murder Alex, because he is always a dick.
Yeah. Steals all the city states, steals all the land, insults you to your face. Just die already.
Number 5. Honor thy civs 1 to 4, for they are in many ways superior to the hallowed civ 5, so that thy turns may go well, and thy may dominate thine foes in whatever way that seems best to thee. Not sure I agree with that entirely, but okay. Especially like Civ 3, I have a particular issue with that in this cluster. Okay. But anyway.
Just because you're salty because you don't have saltpeter.
Everybody is salty because they didn't have saltpeter at some point.
Yeah. I'll show you saltpeter. Wait, no.
Just have to take certain liberties with.
I don't want to see
it. Take certain liberties with rite of passage is all.
You don't want to, but you need
no,
to.
No, I don't.
Number 4.
Remember to always take 1 more turn. 6 days thou play Civ for many hours, but the 7th day is Civ's day, and thou shalt take 1 more turn until there are no more hours in the day. Also known as Turncast.
Yeah.
Number 3. Thou shalt not take the name of Sid Meier in vain, for Sid will not hold any publisher blameless who puts his name on a crappy game.
What happened to Civ 5 then when it first came out?
Oh,
well, the lead designer for that was not the lead designer for Gods and Kings. Just putting that out there.
Well, it's true. Yeah. There you go. That's right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to an Ed Beach design Civ 6. That will be good.
For once, can we get a game that works in multiplayer on release and like doesn't make an eternity between turns?
No. Phil, what are we going to bitch about then?
The okay. AI. You'll
just
bitch
wait.
About the AI.
There'll be something else. If you ever find that there's nothing to bitch about, there's something that's not going correctly.
Oh, we can bitch about having nothing to bitch about.
There you go.
Okay, I'm on board with this.
It's too easy for Phil to rush Dan. What?
Number two. Thou shalt not make for thyself any game in the likeness of Civ, nor play any such game. For Civ is a jealous game, and will surely glitch out unless it has been played the most hours, played in thine Steam library.
Except that if it glitches out, then that's just going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of not being the most played game.
Then you'll be, then Steam becomes a black hole of paradoxes and...
About a black hole of paradox is...
Yep.
A certain game in my Steam library has, like, about 10 times the hours.
And the number one of commandments for Civilization V.
Thou shalt play no other games before Civ. Unless you feel like it.
If you want.
You got to.
I do have to say, in my Steam library, Civ is by far the most played game. It's so easy to come back to. You know, you get tired of the other game.
By far for me. Well, for me, I think I have the most on Civ 4 still, but yeah.
You know, I didn't play Civ 4 through Steam, so it didn't track. I would imagine that Civ 4 might still be my most played game, but in my Steam library, Civ 5 isn't even close, but that's because of EU 4. And I've played a disgusting number of hours in EU 4, so yeah.
Phil, we hear your confession and absolve you.
What are you now, the Pope of Civ?
Just a cardinal.
He doesn't have enough hours for that.
True.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
My roommate who challenged me, the first game I ever played against him, I killed him with a starting warrior in Civ 4 because he moved his warrior away, so I declared on him and captured it while he was building his marker. And he, like, ran from his room to mine.
Did you get thumped in real life?
No. He had some words he wanted to say to me. Like, he wasn't, like, angry, but he wanted to say something snarky for it.
I have a friend who, whenever we play multiplayer together, we are on the same continent. He just starts building up whatever is his most advanced unit and rushes towards my capital. He's like, I'm going to put a kibosh on this. So we had one game where I didn't realize he was on my continent. He was in my north and I hadn't explored that direction yet. And so I send my scout up that direction and there are like 8 spearmen. And I was like, what the hell, Alex? And he's like, the jig is up and declared war. I hadn't built any defensive units or anything yet because I didn't think there was anybody nearby me. And I was actually in the middle of building the great library like a derp.
Well, this has been Polycast episode 253. It's been great being back. I'm QNL, and I was joined today by Mackie.
I still need more caffeination, yes.
The me and team.
My combat prediction meter is always full.
Guest co-host BKGo.
Hulk angry at Phil.
Hulk smash.
And of course, Dan Quick.
Warnings through the ages. Ancient. Arrows in your mirror are closer than they appear. Classical. Rocks. Medieval. Lances. Renaissance. Bullets. Industrial. Shells. Modern. Bombs, atomic rockets, and in the information age, nukes in your mirror are closer than they appear.
And on that cheerful note...
Lisa's not sure what to do with Dan anymore.
Well,
I have some suggestions. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's been so long. It's over 100 episodes. I don't even remember how to close the show anymore.
Polycast After Dark.
Where the coffee is spiked.
Come on, Mackie.
Yeah, speaking of spiked, here's Mackie.
What?
The next topic is yours. We're trying to
forgot to read the list. I was slightly distracted when we started.
Record date?
April 16th, 2016.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.